Getting underway, welcome to the Saturday, January 14th, 2017 meeting of the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission. We have a full slate until we do adjourn. We do have commissioners that have plane reservations and that, so we are going to be sticking to a very tight schedule. Most of you have been here before and you know the procedure, 3 minutes for public testimony. I would deeply appreciate it that throughout today's interactions, there is no cheering, no clapping. It doesn't help anybody. It hinders the cause, and it's not appropriate. We will be respectful, I'm sure, of all people's positions and listen intently. And when you do have your 3 minutes, please limit that. I'm going to have to, again, stick strict to the 3 minutes. So if you go out over by 2 seconds, that's all right. After 3 seconds, the eject button gets pushed. And also, if you're saying, and I'm going to repeat this when we do get to the next public input, but I'm going to say it twice. If you are saying something that has been said 3 or 4 times previously, for the good of the order and everything, maybe you could just say, I pass and I support the previous statements. Again, you've heard that message before, but if this is all we have, that's fine. But if we get to an overflow crowd, which we could, you know, we will simply run out of time and everything. So I think we all understand all of that. So thank you. I'm going to call you up now 2 at a time, as you know, and this is for item number 10, open public input, and Grade King and Ross Barkhurst, please.
Commissioners, Director Unsworth, I would like to read a statement from Jim Scott that was dated 2006. The primary objective of hatchery programs is to establish harvest opportunity and to provide wild stock recovery and conservation benefits. Hatchery Origin Steelhead provides substantial recreational economical benefits to Washington residents. Recreation anglers have harvested in the average of 99,000 steelhead per year since 1995. The vast majority of these were hatchery fish. It estimates during this time steelhead anglers spent $99 million per year on almost $1,000 per fish in Washington communities. I'm here to talk about the Cowlitz River today. And the economic input of $1,000 a fish has probably went up since 2006. It's probably up around $1,200 a fish. WDFW is trying to recover wild fish on the Cowlitz River with 3 dams and no fish passage. How do you do that? I don't know. You have communities in the Cowlitz River Valley from Packwood all the way to Longview, Kelso, that thrive on these winter steelhead that come in the river. And they've been deleted blank. I would like to know what you would like to do for a recovery plan on the Cowlitz River, because I think it's vulnoid, because Tacoma has failed in every way to step to collect any kind of fish. They've got a new project supposed to start this year. We don't know if it's going to work or not. Maybe, maybe not. It's a tragedy that we lose that winter fishery. We have guides that depend on that, families that feed their families on that river due to income from that run. A world-class fishery down the drain. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Any comments? Chuck Tracy, please, and Ross.
Is this on? Yeah, thank you. Ross Barker, South Bend. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with these open sessions. It's really important. I've sent you a description of the Mazamox testing failures, and I'll summarize. First, I want to let you know that I am qualified to look at these kinds of tests. I have a BS in Naval Science from the Naval Academy, took a second major in oceanography, spent 4 years on the banks of Chesapeake Bay, which used to be full of waterfowl, eelgrass, brant, has a circulatory pattern very similar to Willapa Bay. Following 6 years in nuclear submarines, I spent 30 years in large nuclear plants. A large part of that time is performing performance tests, the acceptability of safety systems, and the acceptability of pollution control systems. I personally sprayed imazapyr on Spartina in the bay for 5 years under a permit that I held from the state. I've observed the behavior of dyed chemicals in the bay, and I've observed what happened when others came and sprayed my grass and I had to eliminate them, and sprayed it all by hand with a backpack, 29 acres, for 5 years. I learned how to keep it off the eelgrass and from draining downhill. Okay. I also could not see how you can do that when you're spraying eelgrass itself, because it doesn't stand 6 feet in the air like the Spartina does. So when you spray in the eelgrass, it traps a film of water, and it all starts migrating downhill. The bay is not level, and it's not flat. So I wasn't surprised to see that there were buffer validation test problems. The test was improperly designed, fatal flaw number one. Does not look for damage in the direction of return flow when the tide comes in and moves the chemical off the site. Doesn't look in that direction. And this has been noted by our scientists. The test doesn't require the permitted concentration of the chemical. The permit allows you to put 45% more chemical than was tested. That's another fatal flaw. It does show the inability to comply with the basics of the permit. Three PhDs could not handpick three sites that they could test spray without violating the permit. And they did violate the permit. With the draining off-site, and when the scientists assigned to monitor the test said we need to go back in after a time delay and see how much more grass died, the owner of the plots, Taylor Shellfish, ejected them from the site and did not allow them back in. That's a violation of the permit. You cannot spray and then eliminate from the site, the state from the site, and they did. So we have good comments by six different scientists, the department, and from DNR.
Excuse me, Ross. Could you wind it up? The buzzer went off.
Yes, sir. And so the public needs to know, does the department support those six scientists' comments? Or is the department just watching? You have a position? We're really in no position to prevent ecological damage to the bay if we go forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. Questions? Tim Hamilton, please. And Chuck.
Thank you, Commissioners. Director Unsworth. My name is Chuck Tracy. I'm a Clark County resident, and I'm here to talk about the special hunt permit process. First of all, the point system has been a great improvement to the process, so I thank the Commission and the Department for implementing that, but I did want to address one aspect that I think could use improvement there and that could benefit hunters and the agency as well. And that is the requirement that if you are drawn for two permits for one species in the same year, you are only allowed to accept one of those. So if I applied for a bull and a cow permit or a bull and a quality hunt, and was drawn for both in that same year, I would only be able to choose one, and I would have to forego all of the points that I accrued over perhaps a decade or more to have access to that other permit. So my request, which I think is on the radar screen of the department at some level, but just wanted to bring it to your attention, is to consider a system where a hunter could opt out if they were drawn for a second for two permits. And that would allow them to retain their points and utilize that permit or that option in a future year. I don't think this would be a common problem, but when it did occur, it'd be problematic. It would be difficult for somebody to give up a quality hunt. So my suggestion is that allow some time frame within the drawing to opt out. If a hunter chose to do that, the agency could charge a fee for that. They would also be able to reissue those permits that were foregone in some sort of system like a raffle or even an auction or something. But again, a system where the agency could cover their costs. I believe the permit system wouldn't take a great deal of modification from what I've understood from discussions with staff to accommodate that. And I think you would achieve, benefit from the hunters, be increased satisfaction. I think you'd accomplish your management objectives more easily with that. And I think it could be sort of a win-win situation for hunters and for the agency and for the citizens of the state. So with that, that's my testimony. You've got a written handout that I think you'll receive after this is over. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chuck. Good points. Well made. Thank you. Appreciate it. And Tim, you get the last word for this first part.
Good morning again. Tim Hamilton, Twin Harbors Fish and Wildlife Agency. I want to address the Columbia policy a bit in a different way. In the spirit of our new transparency, I want to point out that we don't have a tribal conflict here today. It's just us. The legislative arena I come out of, if you put a presentation on, you are going to sign up and you're going to tell everybody in that room whether you're in favor of a proposal, against a proposal, what your position is. And we're going to have a presentation by Mr. Scott, my good friend. I believe it's time for this department to tell the public which of these options it wants, which it supports, which it doesn't. In other words, in my mind, I'd like the director, before Mr. Scott starts, to tell us what they've told you. And I think this is appropriate. I've had nothing but trouble for 5 years getting the department to tell me what their position is on anything. And I think that it's imperative that we have a new page open today on how we get over some of our transparency problems with our own public stakeholders. So that's my request, Mr. Director, and I thank you.
Thank you, sir.